Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey everybody, it's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Save big money on your roofing project at Menards with Owens Corning Shingles. Your roof is the first line of defense against the elements and enhances the appearance of your home's exterior. Owens Corning Duration Shingles offer ultimate protection and impressive curb appeal. Choose from 24 colors of Owens Corning Duration Shingles and transform your home today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Story number one. I work as a morgue attendant in a city hospital, mostly the night shift or odd hours when the place is at its quietest. Too quiet sometimes. People always ask me if I get spooked. I usually say no, and I mean it. The dead, in all my experience, have never given me trouble. Sure, bodies purge fluids, make noises, twitch, things that would freak out most people. But if you learn the science, you learn not to take it personally. At least that's how I always saw it until a few months ago. The case was of a teenager, a girl, brought in during the graveyard shift. Hit by a train on her way home late, her limbs mangled to the point where they'd needed two of us to reassemble her for identification. I work with professionals, meticulous, steady hands, every movement with purpose. The main wounds got packed, the body washed and stitched. Face, surprisingly, barely marked, except for a single nasty gash by her mouth. We did what we could for decency, wrapped her in a shroud and tagged her drawer. My partner signed off, and the shift change whistle blew. But I'm slow with paperwork, always have been. That night I went back, figuring I'd clear my backlog before my supervisor started noticing. It was well past 1 in the morning. I remember the corridors seemed emptier than usual, the hum of the fluorescent lights louder. Nothing felt wrong until I opened the morgue. The room was always cold, but an edge hung in the air, sharper, like when you open a freezer full of dry ice. I sat at my desktop near the morgue drawers, typing out my notes, listening to the distant hiss of the air vent and the cold clicks of the old compressor. I'd just finished logging the girl's admission time when I saw it. A thin, dark trail trickling from the base of her drawer and seeping across the floor. Not a lot, but thick enough to raise concern. I figured it was a leak. Maybe the shroud hadn't held. You see all kinds of post-mortem fluids? Blood, bile, worse. Still, the color bothered me. Bright, arterial red. Not the dark ooze that seeps after death. And it was fresh. I opened her drawer expecting the usual mess, but what I found made my skin tighten. There she lay, right where I'd left her. But from her nose, sharp and neatly drawn, two fresh droplets of red ran down toward her lips. Her mouth wasn't gaping, just slightly parted, as if to begin a word. But her eyes, that's what got me. Wide open, glassy but not clouded, staring up at the steel top of the drawer like she was awake and waiting. The pupils were blown, lifeless, but there was something about the whites. Too clear, like she'd been frozen in that stare. I know about post-mortem purging. I've seen bodies bleed, twitch, even sit up if you're unlucky. But closing her eyes should have worked. I did it, gently. The eyelids slid down, stuck for a moment. Then as I shifted, I heard a faint snap, like a tendon releasing, and the lids crept open again. The worst part was, each time I passed her drawer, the eyes were wide again. Every single time. I told myself it was just the shroud dragging, or maybe some play in the lids from the way we'd stitched her. So I pressed the edges shut, even used tape, the medical kind, gentle and neat. Not 3 minutes later, after finalizing her chart, I turned around. The tape had slipped off, resting on her cheek, and the eyes open. The blood from her nose kept coming, just a little, freshly dripping. Nothing else in the room moved. The cold metallic smell of the place was stronger than ever, a mix of chemicals and copper. I heard a thud from the pipes. When I touched the skin of her wrist, frozen, firm, her pulse point was a dead knot. No chance of error there. There was something else, too. A feeling pressing into my ears, making them ring. The kind of pressure that builds before a storm, only deeper, hollow, like descending in a lift too suddenly. When I stepped away from her drawer, the feeling eased up, but each time I approached, it pressed in. It made my vision shimmer at the edges, like looking at heat rising off a road. I snapped some photos for the chart, standard procedure. Nothing unusual in the pictures, but her reflection in the steel wall above her drawer looked off, her face elongated, the eyes wider, the teeth almost visible beneath her lips. It could have just been the curve of the metal, but I deleted the image and retook it. The new shot looked fine, but those earlier moments stayed fixed in my mind. The next morning, the doctors checked her case. No one mentioned the eyes. Maybe I sounded paranoid, but the chill in that room kept sitting on me, heavy and silent. For days after, the temperature in the drawers felt off. Not just cold, but wrong, biting. I wondered more than once if we'd misdiagnosed something, missed a trace of life. But I checked her pulse, breathing, temperature, flat. No sign of brain activity. I still check her case file, probably more than I should. The family released her for burial. There's no sign anything was off in her records. But when I close my own eyes at night, I sometimes see her staring. Sometimes in that almost sleep where thoughts blur. I picture her mouth moving, just a fraction, like she's about to say something, her lips and nose bright with stains that never dried. I keep telling myself there's a reason, pressure, rigor, maybe the angle of the drawer, maybe a reaction to cold. It could be any of those things, any of the ordinary explanations. That's what I repeat. And yet, whenever I pass that end of the morgue, the air feels colder. Even now, just thinking about it, my scalp contracts and a crawling sensation starts behind my ears. Maybe I just worked too many night shifts, but the look in her eyes in that cold metal drawer made me feel, more than I'd care to admit, that some part of her wasn't finished. Whatever happened, whatever science explains it, I can't shake the feeling she was trying, somehow, to get someone to notice. There's nothing left in her drawer now. But sometimes, just sometimes, I still see a faint, rusty line on the steel where the blood ran away, and I find myself checking, twice, that her eyes are closed. Story number two. This happened on a stormy night while I was on my shift in the hospital morgue. It's an old brick building, added on to in weird phases, full of chill corridors and white-tiled rooms lit by those shuddering lights. Stuff happens here sometimes. Most of us have a story or two. Jokes about ghosts, nerves going bad at 3 a.m. What happened to me isn't a joke, and even thinking about it now makes my skin crawl. There's one room at the end of a service hall that we all avoid if we can. Technically, it's a dry storage space, a cramped, windowless room with a shitty, frost-bitten overhead light and plastic sheeting hung over a single chair in the corner. That chair is for unidentified arrivals or unclaimed property cases, mostly. It never gets used for long. What's weird is how everyone started acting around it soon after I started here. No one said much, but even the day guys seemed to avoid dealing with anything in there. If you drew keys for it, you'd grumble and then put it off. I never really thought about it. Old places collect bad stories. One night last spring, I was working a double. It was raining. The place was empty. No new admissions, nothing on the radio. Just the hum of the air handling unit and the rattle of water on the windows. I was walking the hall near storage, holding a stack of forms, when I heard something weird from behind the locked door. It wasn't a slam or a creak, just a sound you know when you hear it, a chair leg scraping hard over the tile. Not a random noise, a physical object moving. There was a pause, then footsteps, slow, measured, muffled like someone in soft slippers. The steps came right up to the door and stopped. I instantly assumed someone was inside who shouldn't be. A late visitor, or maintenance, maybe. I even knocked, called out, but no answer. Before I even touched my keys, the fluorescent lights inside flicked on. The older bulbs always stutter before they come up, but these kicked in with a buzzing snap. I let myself in, expecting to catch someone. But there was no one. It was a nothing little room. Shelves, a low table, that single chair. The chair had never left its spot in the corner in the few months I'd worked there. Now it was in the middle of the floor, facing the door, plastic cover crinkled and gathered like it had been scooted and spun. Nothing else seemed touched, just the visible skid marks on the pale tile, like someone had muscled it halfway across. Some part of me thought this was a prank, a weird setup. I looked around, checked behind every box, even under the table. Nothing, just the faint reek of cleaning solution and something else, old sweat or worse. Everything went silent, kind of thick. That's the only way I can put it. Silence has a weight sometimes, especially in morgues. I heard it next, a low humming that didn't sound like the air vent or my own breathing. It sounded too human, thin and sad, a song I didn't recognize fading in and out behind me, exactly in the spot where I'd expect someone to stand if they wanted to watch me. I spun so hard I felt dizzy. No one was there.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Before I could move, the room fell into pitch darkness. My first thought was the breaker had blown. The difference was immediate, black as a coffin, like the walls shrank in closer, swallowing the chemical lamp glow, shadows pooling. My skin prickled. Something icy touched the back of my neck, abrupt and unmistakable. A breath, or a hand, or both. I remember freezing, completely unable to move or breathe. It was as if I'd been shoved sideways into water, with an invisible pressure pulling me toward the chair. After what felt like a long time, but was probably just a second or two, the lights sputtered back on. The humming stopped instantly. That chair, the one covered in plastic, was moving, and then in the blink of an eye, it stopped. Like I had been dreaming, maybe. There was no earthquake, no draft, just a subtle, slow, scraping movement as if someone was sliding it back into the corner. But there was no one there. I nearly bolted out right then, but I forced myself to look up because I dropped my keys. That's when I realized I couldn't breathe quite right. My chest felt like something heavy was pressing down on it. A weight so real I staggered, gasping, all while some rotten, sweet chemical smell filled my nose and mouth. Panic made it worse. I tried to rationalize the cleaning fluid, my tired lungs, low oxygen, but it wasn't like that. It felt like someone very cold, had their hand over my mouth, their palm pressing so close I could feel the lines of their skin, though no one was there. When I finally stumbled back to the door, I realized my keys weren't working. Not stuck exactly. They refused to turn, like the lock itself had warped. I had to wiggle the mechanism until the inside bolt finally popped with a sound too loud in the quiet. When I stepped out, blinking from the glare, I noticed something else. The automatic door closer clicked shut behind me, slower than usual, as if something else had slipped out behind me unseen. I chalked all of it up to being exhausted, or just plain suggestible. Maybe I'd let the stories get to me, but I haven't been back in that room alone since. Others avoid it too. When pressed, the older guys mention stuff. Lights flickering, hearing scraping, voices when there's no one inside, things left out of place, keys jamming from the inside. They joke that the chair is for someone who never got found, that no matter how many times you move it, it never wants to stay away from the door. I still work nights sometimes, and every so often, I'll walk past that room. The air near the door is always colder. Honestly, I think that it's probably nothing. Nerves jangling and playing tricks. That's what I tell myself. But sometimes, when the halls are really empty, I catch a hint of humming drifting out from under the door, and I hurry on by. I don't know if I believe in ghosts, but I know I'll never go in that room alone again, and I never ever want to hear that breath on the back of my neck. If there's something in there, it's still waiting. And sometimes I worry it's not waiting for the next unclaimed case. It's waiting for someone who will stay and listen. Story number three. I work security and transport night shifts at the city hospital. 2 years ago, I switched from days to nights. Pressure for overtime and an extra shift allowance pulled me in. The work itself was easy enough. Wheeling patients between floors, signing off equipment incoming after hours, doing rounds, keeping myself awake. But the nights, well, you'd understand if you ever did them, are strange in ways you can't explain. By midnight, the staff thin out. There are two nurses downstairs, a sleepy receptionist, and sometimes me. The hallway lights buzz and flicker for no reason. It never feels fully dark, but never fully bright either. The weirdest part is how you get used to the silence. Sometimes you might hear a sudden clack of a boiler. You start tuning out real sounds and picking up on things you think might be sounds. The phantom echo of high heels, a cough, a voice in the stairwell, always just out of range. The night it happened was like any other, at least until maybe 2:20 a.m. A new arrival, an older man, cardiac arrest, came in through one of the back elevators with the usual paperwork clipped to his wrist. My job was to run the gurney to the morgue, tag him, sign the record, and log the entry in the system. The morgue was, ironically, the literal coldest part of the hospital. The industrial freezer there was always set to the low 30s. If you stood still long enough, the cold soaked through your bones. As I wheeled the gurney in, I noticed every sound seemed sharper. The gurney wheels screeched on the tile. My own breath clouded a little in the air. I always closed the steel door behind me. The corridor light never quite made it inside, so it glowed only from a tiny bulb above the counter, flickering with the hum of the fridge compressor. I was just about to turn and leave when I heard a tapping noise from the row of steel drawers. At first it was faint, barely louder than the compressor. Three short, sharp taps, and then nothing. I did what anybody would do. Paused, listened hard, shrugged, told myself it was probably the old machinery acting up again. I walked to the logbook near the counter and started filling it out. The cold pressed against my cheeks. As I reached the third line, there was a sudden gust across my face. Warm, humid, just for a second. So out of place in that room, it actually threw me off for a moment. It's hard to describe, but the air felt like someone had exhaled right on my mouth and nose. It made me step back, heart pounding a little, and check the vent above me. I stood there rubbing my arms and realized the vent shouldn't have blown warm air. The hospital's air system never pumped heat down to the morgue. I thought, maybe the compressor kicked off cycle. I don't know. But then I glanced over and saw one of the lower drawers, a long stainless steel thing with a handle, sitting halfway open. The gap wasn't wide, maybe 4 inches, but enough that I could see the corner of a white shroud inside motionless. My brain tried to make sense of it. Maybe the tech had left it open. Maybe a gurney had bumped it. Maybe I'd done it myself earlier. I laughed a little, a short, anxious sound, and walked over to push it closed. It slid in easy with a dull metallic thunk. I was about to leave, hand already on the door, when another drawer, this time from the top row, slid open with a grinding, scraping noise. This one came out almost all the way, stopping at the rail, and the way the light hit it, I couldn't tell what was inside. The room seemed tighter than before, air thicker. I stared, half expecting someone to pop up. My heart was beating so fast I could feel it in my ears. It got worse. Not even a second after I processed the top drawer, a slam echoed off the metal, sharp enough to make me jerk backward. This drawn-out pattern started. One drawer would open, next would slam shut, another would rattle open. Like some invisible game, the pattern growing more wild, more angry. Drawers up top shaking violently, lower ones slamming in and out. So hard the metal buckled and shrieked. At some point, several drawers were just flying open and shut at the same time, some bending at unnatural angles I'd never thought possible. They made this muffled, thunderous banging that I felt through my feet. I seriously started to fear one would rip off the racks and slam into me, but my legs felt rooted to the spot. The cold was gone. I was sweating. The back of my neck felt hot and prickly. my eyes watered. Combined with the smell of disinfectant and something else, raw and mineral, it was all making my head spin. It's fuzzy what happened next. My memory kind of fractures, like it's missing time. No sense of running, no sense of screaming. I must have blacked out. Next thing I knew, it was morning, sunlight in my face, and I was lying outside the morgue on my back in the muddy patch where the drain leaks after heavy rain. My jacket was soaked and my head ached like I'd hit concrete. A nurse came running down and shouted my name. She asked if I'd been attacked or had a fall. All I could remember was the chorus of steel drawers, slamming, rattling, again and again. They found nothing out of place in the morgue. No drawers broken. The cameras in that hall didn't record anything abnormal except me walking in, then being found 10 feet outside in that mud, passed out. I checked the vents and compressors myself. Nothing reported wrong, no complaints from maintenance. Some colleagues joke the night shift makes people see things. Maybe I'd had a panic attack. Maybe I slipped and hit my head and dreamed the rest. But I never went into that morgue again. Even during daytime rounds, I'd walk the long way around. My supervisor still laughs about it, but I can't explain it away, not fully. I tell myself I was exhausted or the old machinery just glitched. I want to believe it, I do. Sometimes, though, just before sleep, I hear banging, metal on metal, behind my eyelids. Something about those drawers, how they opened with determination, with force, like something inside needed out, sticks with me. There are explanations for everything. I just don't know which explanation I need to live with. Story number four. I'm not really a storyteller or the kind of person who puts much faith in unusual activities. I'm more of a practical, keep your head down kind of guy. I work in healthcare at a rural hospital out in the middle of nowhere. Something happened that still nags at me. And even after convincing myself there was an explanation, a small part of my brain just won't leave it alone. The hospital's not even that old, maybe 30 to 40 years tops. But people hate going to the basement anyway. Sometimes the power's iffy out here, and there are plenty of local rumors. But in the medical field, you learn to ignore noise and get the job done. The morgue's in the basement, just past laundry. I've had to do late-night paperwork, run down for supplies stored near the big metal drawers, and yeah, sometimes move a body if an ambulance brought in someone from a car crash or heart attack. I'd gotten used to the lights in the morgue flickering, always convinced it was some wiring issue. I actually mentioned it to maintenance a few times, but they never really seemed to get around to fixing it. The result was a cold, dim corridor with the lights buzzing and the sensation you were underwater. That's how hospitals feel at 1 a.m., like you're in a place just a little to the left of the real world. One shift, things were really routine up until almost the end. I'd settled in with coffee at the nurse's station when the buzzer suddenly went off, a harsh mechanical sound that signals a door's been opened or the alarm's been tripped. Standard procedure is to check on it, log the reason, and reset the system. We had no new admissions, so it should have been dead quiet down there. Walking toward the basement, just the echo of my footsteps, I felt that annoying pins and needles crawl up my spine that you only get when you're utterly, pointlessly alone. That's normal for me. Fear is just your brain reacting to silence and shadows. I kept reminding myself of exactly that. But the closer I got to the morgue, the more obvious it was. Something was off. The flickering overhead light was worse. Erratic strobing, like someone was fiddling with a dimmer switch. The door to the morgue was closed, and when I reached for the knob, it didn't move. Not a millimeter. It was stuck, not locked exactly, but like it had been welded shut. I rattled it once, called out, even though I knew no one would answer, and told myself maybe the air pressure shifted in the building. A weird vacuum lock, nothing more. I was going to fetch the skeleton key from the supply closet when the door just clicked open. Not gradually, a sudden releasing jolt, like it had been waiting for me. Switching on the light was useless. The bulbs overhead glowed a dim, angry red. I figured maybe the emergency bulb was on, but it didn't match the usual color spectrum. My eyes took a second to adjust, and then I realized that nothing about the room was right. There were no stainless steel drawers. Instead, there were things hanging from the ceiling. At first, I thought it was plastic or some kind of Halloween decoration that got stuck and left behind by bored night staff. But as my vision adjusted, I saw they weren't props. There were dozens of faces, masks, but not plastic, hollowed, dried, stretched like animal hides, hanging from wires and swaying, almost breathing with the hum of the air duct. The eye sockets were empty and deep, rims blackened. Some of the faces had clumps of hair. Some of them had crooked teeth or bruises, or the texture that skin gets after being scraped raw. What didn't help was the smell. All hospitals smell faintly of bleach and old sweat, but this was something else. Iron, old meat left to rot. I could taste it in the back of my throat. At that point, my chest was heaving, but a rational part of me tried to process everything. Maybe a prank, maybe a hallucination. This happened, I told myself, to exhausted night staff all the time. Maybe it was some kind of nightmare I hadn't snapped out of, some sleep paralysis trick. The door behind me shut with the exact same sudden click, plunging the room into a deeper, barely lit red shadow. My hand went immediately to the knob, but the door didn't move. I swear that's when I felt it. Pain, like a razor slicing along my right cheek. Cold first, then a sudden sting. I pressed my palm to my face, expecting my fingertips to come away dark and wet, but there was nothing but clammy, hospital-washed skin. My reflection in the shiny corner of a surgical tray, why one was even there I can't say, looked paler, but intact. Sound started low. The hum of the freezer kicking on, I thought, but it grew, stretching into high, thin shrieks. Dozens of voices layered, all distorted and echoing. There was desperate wailing, sharp gasps, the kind of horror movie noise constructed from real pain. I remember pressing my hands over my ears, wishing it would stop, trying not to look up at the moving, flesh-pale faces that seemed to twist every time the light flickered. I panicked. I really did. I kicked the door, pounded on it, turned the handle in every direction. There was another jolt, one last shriek that peaked in my skull, and the door suddenly popped open. The hall lights were normal. There was an empty cart blocking the door from swinging fully, but that was it. No mass, no red light, just the regular hospital basement. Somehow I ended up sprinting for the main stairwell. I didn't look back. I spent the end of my shift in the break room, palms sweating, watching the wall clock. My face itched, but I wouldn't touch it. When staff came in for the morning shift and found me white as a sheet, I mumbled something about a fainting spell. When the sun was up, I went down there, daylight streaming through small, high basement windows. The morgue was normal, drawers, fluorescent lights, not a single mask or spot of blood. The smell was just cleaning supplies and cold air. I left that day. I typed out my resignation on my phone while sitting in my car, still shaking. It's been months. I can almost believe it was stress, that maybe the mask shapes were lab coats or hanging sheets or a dream that invaded reality after too many overnights. But every morning, when I shave, I notice faint pink lines curling on my cheeks. Not scars exactly, just shallow marks, like someone traced my face with the edge of a knife. They haven't faded. The doctor I now work with, at a cheerful daytime clinic, says they're nothing, probably from a rash or pressure during sleep. Maybe, but I never sleep on my side. And sometimes, if I close my eyes too long at night, I still see 100 hollow faces, staring with empty black eyes, and hear a shriek in the distance that's not quite gone. Story number 5. I work full-time as a forensic technician for a county medical examiner's office. That's not the weird part. Dead people don't bother me. It's the living you usually have to watch anyway. When you spend every weekday beneath harsh white lights, scraping under fingernails and rinsing blood down industrial drains, your mind gets used to static reality. At least I thought so until last September. The autopsy suite has a certain look. Clean, but not clean like your kitchen. Clean like something that could never have been alive. There's a long stainless steel counter spanning the far wall, the kind with metal storage doors underneath, the kind that reflect everything above and opposite back at you in a warped, wide sheet of dim mirror. I always noticed my shoes, sometimes my face if I bent down, sometimes the lone fluorescent fixture glinting overhead. The surface holds every fingerprint and water spot. Bosses hate that. That morning I came in at 5:15. Nobody else was there yet. The place was silent. I set my coffee near the logbook and began checking toe tags for the morning's procedures. It was maybe 10, 15 minutes in, bleary-eyed from lack of sleep, that I happened to look up. In the mirrored steel below the counter's rim, I saw someone standing behind me. He was tall, broad-shouldered, wearing a black suit, impossibly out of place in the morgue. I could see thick black hair, but his face was just skin. No features, no mouth, no eyes, no nose, as if someone had forgotten to finish making him. I felt an instinctive animal panic, just a flash, and spun around expecting a prank. There was nothing behind me. Empty aisle, shoes squeaking on the linoleum. I tried to shake it off. It was early, maybe my brain filled in weird images. But it happened again, and again. Every time I was near any reflective surface, lockers, glass doors, even the old coffee machine if the light hit it right, I saw him, standing just behind my shoulder in the mirror, suit, hair, faceless. I never saw his hands. The first week, I'd turn, heart thumping, ready to confront whoever it was, but always nothing. Silence, empty benches, just the hum and click of cold storage in the background. By the second week, I started trying to rationalize. Maybe it was sleep deprivation. We'd been running double shifts after a bus pileup, or some weird stress hallucination. My mother used to get migraines with visual auras. Maybe it was genetic. I started drinking less coffee, caught up on sleep, but the visions didn't stop. Then it began bleeding into my dreams. Hard to describe if it hasn't happened to you. The dreams were sharp, not blurry around the edges like most. Always I was back in the suite, alone, shuffling paperwork. I'd feel his presence long before I saw him, that raw sense of someone behind me. I could never turn around, but I could always see him in the glass, standing close enough to feel his breath, which was impossible because he had no mouth. The air would get cold. Sometimes he would raise an arm, fingerless, stump-like, and I'd wake up gasping, the sheets slick with freezing sweat. My old Fitbit showed my heart at 120 beats per minute for hours. Maybe it was just stress-related sleep paralysis, I started thinking. I tried to laugh it off, brought it up as a joke once with a buddy who also worked nights. He shrugged, said sometimes the suite got to him, too. About 3 weeks in, it escalated. One night, around 2:30 a.m., I was sleeping in my studio apartment when I heard my door creak. It's an old place. That's not uncommon. But something felt off. My back was to the door, and yet every hair on me stood up. The air got heavy and sharp, like that moment right before a power outage. My body wouldn't obey me. It was like I was pressed into the mattress by a concrete block. I could hear slow, dragging footsteps that stopped just beside me. I tried to turn my head or scream, but my jaw wouldn't unclench. My throat wouldn't move, not even to whimper. I could see, just in the corner of my vision, a pale shape at the foot of my bed. A head and shoulders where there should be a face, but instead, only blank, bloodless skin. I remember the faint, acrid smell, like burnt wiring, and the way breathing felt like I was inhaling crushed ice. He didn't move. He just looked at me, if you can call it that, with a featureless head angled right at my own. Something about the shape made me think he was grinning, though he didn't have a mouth. It lasted an eternity, probably seconds in reality. Then, as quickly as flipping a light switch, he was gone. The pressure lifted, I shot upright, gasping, arms flailing for my phone. Nothing. My room was empty, light filtering in from the street. The door cracked, just as I'd remembered. After that night, I began sleeping with the light on, the TV playing some background static. For a week, I didn't see him at all. I started to think maybe the spell had broken. One Thursday morning, as I was re-tagging a John Doe in cold storage, the day shift pathologist wandered in. She stopped, frowned at me, and asked me with a strange tilt of her head who the man was that had just been standing behind me. She thought maybe it was a new detective or a visiting family member. She only caught a glimpse, but he was tall, dark-haired. She only remembered how strange it was that she couldn't recall his face. My hands went cold, chest tight, all the exhaustion returning in a single wave. I laughed it off again, saying she'd probably seen someone leaving the other way, just a trick of the light. But I felt a prickling on the nape of my neck I couldn't shake. The mirror visions stopped after that. No more dreams, no more sudden cold, no more faceless man hovering in reflections. In fact, everything returned to routine. Dead bodies, paperwork, coffee stains, and the squeak of rubber soles. But sometimes in the early dark hours before the day shift arrives, I still walk past the metal doors and see my own reflection, ghostly and stretched. And I sometimes get the feeling that if I looked carefully enough, or if I lingered too long, I might see him again. Or worse, maybe he never really left at all. Maybe he's just standing out of frame, waiting for me to let my guard down. There are explanations, of course. Stress-induced hallucinations, sleep paralysis, power of suggestion, maybe even gas leaks or simple exhaustion. But if you work in the quiet rooms with the dead, you learn that not every question has an answer that lets you sleep easy at night. Story number 6. I have worked over 30 years in a city morgue, the kind of place that strips you of imagination because reality is unsettling enough. I spent every midnight shift with dead bodies for company, and you'd think nothing would bother me anymore. Decay, the quiet cold, the odd noises buildings make at 3 a.m. All part of the job. It happened maybe 5 or 6 years ago, close to the end of my time at the morgue. My colleague Priya and I were sharing the graveyard shift. She had just brewed us both some terrible vending machine coffee when her phone rang. I could tell from her face it was serious. A sick kid, a panicked husband at home. I told her to head out, that I'd hold the fort. It wasn't the first time. Morgues are always short-staffed. So there I was, sitting beneath those harsh fluorescent lights, working through the endless log sheets, updating entries, a radio muttering weather in the corner. I kept thinking about the sharp smell of disinfectant and the hum of the fridge units where the bodies were stored. The city was silent at that hour except for the distant wail of an ambulance now and then. It must have been around 2:30 a.m. when the air changed. That's the only way to put it. It got heavier, like the oxygen wasn't reaching the bottom of my lungs. Little things became magnified. The ticking clock, a subtle rattling from one corner where cold air entered a vent, frost shifting on metal. With my pen scratching on forms, I heard definite footsteps from the hallway. Not the shuffling of someone half asleep, but deliberate, measured steps. No visitors at this hour, no guards around. Budget cuts. My first impulse was to check for a stray patient, maybe a local who got lost or, as happens, someone drunk looking for shelter. I got up and walked to the entrance of the corridor. Streetlights bled a little gray through the far window, but most of the place was shadow. I saw a figure about halfway down, in an area where the light from my room didn't reach, not moving at first, just standing, facing away from me. They were pale and thin. My stomach dropped. It looked wrong. I called out, my voice low and sharp, but it didn't even flinch. I stepped forward and briefly lost it in the shadows between the doors. When I reached the spot, there was no one. I know old buildings and tricks of the light can play games. Maybe it was a shadow. Maybe my fatigue was catching up to me. My eyes started to itch. My scalp prickled. I began to feel like I was being watched from multiple directions at once. Every step echoed too loud. On my way back, the corridor lights buzzed and flickered. Flickering bulbs aren't unusual there. Bad wiring, always under repair. But in that weird strobe, the figure was back, right ahead, but facing away from me. The thing that made every hair on my body stand up was the sense it could see me, like it was studying me over its shoulder, even though its head never turned. The way the posture shifted, head still, but the angle of its neck straining, like a puppet on strings. Then it started moving, and I realized its feet were facing completely the wrong way. Ankles twisted around so the toes pointed backwards, but it moved fluidly, not stumbling, not hampered at all. It walked or maybe glided, I still don't know, toward me, but with its back to me, and yet somehow unmistakably aware of me. As it approached, the air grew colder until my breath fogged, which shouldn't have happened given the building's heating. I froze. My jaw clenched so hard my teeth ached. Then without warning, it broke into a run. darting at me, making no noise except the slap of bare skin on concrete. My body chose for me. Adrenaline took over, and I scrambled backward, nearly tripping. I checked every door, frantic. Most were locked. I stumbled into the cleaning cupboard, barreled in, and managed to slam and lock the flimsy door behind me. That figure reached the door in seconds. The sound it made pounding was physical, animal. Not a person's fist. A heavy, rhythmic slamming, so powerful, the hinges rattled and fine dusty plaster drifted from the ceiling. Moldy mop water stank in the room, but I pressed myself into the corner and hid. I could hear my own heartbeat, loud and desperate. Then, the pounding stopped. Stillness returned, except for a faint scraping sound outside, like someone running a hand along the metal siding. The instinct, not rational, just animal, told me the figure was now at the window, behind me, staring in. I couldn't make myself look at first. My mind screamed, "Don't turn around, don't look at it," but I couldn't stop myself forever. When I finally forced myself to look, no one was there. The glass was frosted from the cold, but there were handprints, huge, deep, almost like they'd been scorched black into the pane. I waited. I sat and listened for hours. Every noise magnified, every creak felt like the prelude to another attack, but nothing came. Eventually, faint gray light came through the window and people started to arrive. I left the room, hands shaking, refusing to look at the window again. Nothing else was out of place except those prints. Though by the time I could bring someone back, the frost had melted and there was nothing but a smear. When Priya came in, it was as if nothing happened. She walked in, surprised I wasn't at the front desk, asked if everything went okay. I didn't tell her about what happened, but something nagged at me when she said she hadn't come back since her call last night. No one else had keys, nobody else was scheduled. I searched for hospital records that might explain it. Nobody reported a missing person. Nobody supposedly entered or left the building. I've told myself it was exhaustion. Maybe old wiring made the lights flicker and my half-asleep mind cooked up shapes out of shadows. Maybe a vagrant with a deformity or a prank that went wrong. Even now, writing this, I try to explain it away, repeating those reasons like a prayer. But in my bones, I can still feel that cold, the deep sense that something watched and understood and wanted inside. I never worked a night shift alone again after that. Sometimes in the quiet of early morning, I still hear those backwards footsteps. I'm retired now, but whatever it was, I'm not sure the doors of the morgue shut tightly enough behind it. Story number 7. I want to preface this by saying that I've always been a rational person. Working at a hospital for 8 years will do that. Exposure to the worst of life can make you see concrete facts, not out-of-the-world stories. But 7 months ago, I still can't explain it. The hospital I worked in wasn't anything special. A two-story building that always seemed underlit and drafty, even by government building standards. I mostly handled supply runs and odd maintenance tasks during the night shift, which is when the weirdness started. There was a room on the first floor, not far from the morgue. Everyone knew about it, even if nobody ever talked about it. Old paperwork listed it as storage room 17, but as long as I'd been there, it was always locked. Not just locked, padlocked with the kind of chunky antique lock people only use when they're actively trying to keep something out or in. The cleaning staff always joked about the witch's room. I used to laugh it off. Hospitals are full of odd traditions and morbid humor. One night, I was called to check on some equipment in the morgue. It was just after 3 in the morning, and the hallways were the color of weak tea in the dim hallway lights. I grabbed my toolkit and made my way down, shivering a bit like always when I passed that locked room beside the morgue. Except this time, the door was slightly ajar. It's hard to describe the feeling I got. Like when you step off a curb you didn't see, except it lasted for 2 whole minutes. My head told me to let it go, report it to security and move on. But there was this itch at the back of my mind, a nagging curiosity. Maybe it was just because I finally had an opportunity to solve the building's one dumb little mystery. I pushed the door open. Cold air whooshed out and touched my skin in that immediate, unpleasant way that makes all your arm hairs stand straight up. I flicked the lights on. The bulbs overhead clicked painfully alive, casting everything a greenish hue. Inside, the room looked like it hadn't been touched in decades. A scattering of dust covered everything, thick enough that I could trace my initials in it. There was an old hospital bed jammed into the far corner, with what looked like rusty chains attached at each corner. On the floor was a pile of what I thought was rags or maybe some type of old equipment. But the longer I stared, the more it seemed to unspool in all directions, like a tangled heap of black plastic wrap or maybe hair. There was a smell to the room too, something acrid, coppery, sour. It felt heavy in my nose and throat. I was about to step out, my curiosity fully killed, when the door swung shut behind me. Not like it was caught in a draft or the hinges were shot, but fast and deliberate. I ran back and grabbed at the handle. Nothing. It was locked tight, and the padlock was dangling from the inside, which made no sense at all. Looking for something to wedge the lock open, I stumbled backward. My boot caught on the black heap, and I went down hard. Dust puffed up around me as something wet squelched beneath my hand. My flashlight rolling onto its side threw stretched shadows across the walls. I saw in the brief spinning beam the chains from the bed clattering up against the rails. My leg got snagged, then both, and in one horrible movement, the chains clamped around my ankles. I tried to kick away, but the chains just pulled tighter. For several long seconds, I just lay there, my mind trying and failing to make sense of what was happening. All I could hear was my own pulse, thumping loud in my ears. I pulled and twisted, swearing through gritted teeth. The bed was ancient but didn't budge. The cold metal pressed into my skin, and every time I jerked, the bed frame scraped out this horrible screeching sound that bounced off the walls and made my teeth ache. That's when I looked up. There were scratch marks all over the ceiling, tight parallel.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits started just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Bell grooves burn against the yellowed plaster. Some of them looked old, scabbed over with whatever passed for dust there. But right above me, they were sharp, almost fresh. The white plaster scattered around them like snow. They were far from any wall, and I swear, no ladder or tool could get you up there. Then something splattered onto my cheek, hot, sticky, and unmistakable. The red color impossible to ignore, even in the weird green light. Another drip hit my forehead, followed by another. I remember my body moving like it was underwater, writhing, twisting, but the chains refused to let up. The bed groaned beneath me, cold and rough, the smell of blood now everywhere. With every bone in my body, I screamed, not sure if it echoed outside the room, because my own panic drowned everything out. I don't remember how I got out. The next thing I recall, I was being shaken awake by two of my colleagues, faces tight with concern, eyes wide. They told me I'd been missing for over a day, that the door had been locked from the outside the whole time, and that nobody could figure out how I got inside. There was dust all over my uniform, deep red stains matted in with the gray. My wrist bore purple bruises like I'd struggled with cuffs, but the nurse who checked me found nothing actually broken. I tried to explain, But every time I tried to piece together those missing hours after the blood fell, my memory cut out, just a blank. Worse, every time I pass that end of the hallway, I get a taste. The taste of cold metal and rust. Sometimes in my dreams, I see the ceiling above my bed, scratched up and close. My colleagues mostly just joke about it. Some think I had a stress-induced breakdown. Others whisper about chemical leaks, or that maybe I sleepwalked and hallucinated the whole thing. For a while, I believe them. Still, late at night, I can almost feel the chains again, heavy and cold. And sometimes I wake up certain that I'll taste blood in the back of my throat. Maybe there's a logical explanation. Maybe the door wasn't really locked, or maybe I lost time and made everything up. But if you ever find yourself pulled by curiosity toward a room nobody uses, especially one chained and left to rot beside a morgue, trust your instincts and stay away. I still work at the hospital, but I never go near that hallway ever again.